Chapter 9. Four Gods. Our brothers run to the edges of the Imperium to cower in the shadows of the dark gods that protect them. Only we, the Night Lords, the sons of Conrad Kurz, are strong enough to stand alone. We will bring our wrath upon the Empire that betrayed us. And though the ages may see us divided and broken by the endless war ahead, we will stand untainted until the stars themselves die. The War Sage Malkarion, epilogue of his work, The Tenebrous Path. Talos opened his eyes to nothingness, to one who saw through pitch darkness as naturally as a mortal man saw in daylight. This was both unwelcome and unfamiliar. He turned, still seeing nothing, unsure if this was because there was nothing to see in the blackness, or if he had lost his sight. It occurred to him with no small amusement that it had inflicted this very fate on so many mortals over the years, forcing them to awaken in the darkness of the Covenant's interior. A cautious smile spread across his lips as he enjoyed the irony. The air was cold on his flesh. Flesh? At the first hints of the sensation, he could see himself now, his hands before his face, bone white and blue-veined, and his tunic of dark weave. He was out of his battle plate. How could this be? Had his wound been so terrible that First Claw had cut him from his armor and... Wait. His wound. His pale hands pulled open the front of his robe, baring his chest to the darkness. His torso, a pale sculpted echo of ancient Romani marble statues of their warlike gods, was unbroken by any wound. Across his sternum were the junction plugs and connection sockets required to link into the powered systems of his armor, and he could make out the hard shell of the black carapace implanted beneath his skin, forming the subdermal armor that sheathed his form in additional protection and allowed him to interface with his battle plate senses. But no wound.
Talos,
a voice spoke from the blackness. He turned to meet it, hands reaching for weapons that didn't exist here, wherever here was. The speaker was a Night Lord. Talos recognized the armor instantly, for it was his own. In the nothingness, he faced himself, staring at his armored image with something approaching fury.
What madness is this?
A test,
his reflection said, removing its helm. The face beneath the helmet was, and was not, his own visage. Eyes of silver stared back at him, and the center of his forehead was branded with a stylized rune of sickening devotion. The burn mark was still fresh, still trickling blood down his reflection's face.
"You are not me," Talos said. "I would never wear the slave mark of the ruinous powers."
"I am what you might be,"
his image smiled, revealing teeth as silver as his eyes.
If you were bold enough to unlock your potential.
And if you will not hear this offer from me, you will hear it from my allies. The War Master's words came back to him now, trickling into his consciousness, as the blood trickled into his reflection's alien eyes.
You are not one of the ruinous powers, he said to the image before him. You are not a god.
Am I not?
It replied, smiling indulgently.
No god would be so brazen, so unsubtle. You would turn your eyes upon one soul? Never.
I turn my eyes to a trillion souls with each passing moment. It is the nature of a god to exist in such a way.
An ugly thought clawed its way up from Talos's doubts to reach his lips.
Am I dead? No,
the god smiled again.
Though you are wounded in the world of flesh.
Then this is the warp? You have taken my spirit from my body.
Be silent. The others come.
He was right. Other figures manifested about him, one behind, one to the left, one to the right, taking the cardinal points around where he stood in the darkness. He couldn't focus upon them. Each time he turned, he saw nothing except the others existing at the edges of his vision.
This, said the first figure, is what I offer you.
He reached out a gauntleted hand to Talos.
You are keen of mind and great of vision. You know your armies of God's sons will fail without true gods to lead them. Your flesh gods have fallen. Your fathers are slain. You are godless. And in godlessness lies defeat.
Touch me and die, the Astartes warned. Mark my words, false god. If you touch me, you will die.
I am Slaaneth. I am the one who thirsts. I am a god more than your gene father ever was. And this,
the figure repeated,
is what I offer you.
Talos opened his eyes to a battlefield he claimed heart and soul. The enemy, the Imperial army, was reduced to a graveyard of wrecked tanks and corpses that reached from horizon to horizon. He stood above his warriors as they kneeled before him, feeling the present sting of some vicious new battle chemical stimulant flooding his veins. He was wounded, for there were cracks in his swollen armor where reddish ichor flowed down his warplate. These wounds, great rents and rips in his flesh, open to the chill air of the battlefield, ached with a pleasure so intense he cried his thanks to the stars above. Was this what it was to be a Primarch? To laugh at wounds that would destroy even an Astartes? To feel war as an amusing diversion while crushing a million enemies under the might of invincible armies? Perhaps this was what the Night Haunter had felt, this exultation. Blood-slick claws tore flesh rents in his cheek as he scratched himself, laughing at the delicious pain. Pain itself became a joke to those who could never die. Prince Talos, his troops were shouting up at him. Prince Talos! No, not shouting, worshipping. They bowed and cried and prayed for his attention. This
is wrong, Talos growled. The Night Haunter was never exalted above us as a perfect, immortal being. He was moribund and cursed, stronger for all the trials and agonies he endured. This, he finished, turning from Slaaneth, is not how he lived. It is not how I will live either.
Sirion,
the figure smiled. Talos had never smiled like that in his life.
What of him?
The Astartes narrowed his black eyes, instinctively reaching for weapons that weren't there.
His soul has felt my caress. Your brother hears the fears of every living thing. My gift to him.
He resists.
On the surface, he resists. The parts of his mind that shout silently relish the sounds of weeping souls. He feeds on fear.
He enjoys what he senses.
You are lying, Talos said, but his broken conviction was evident in the growl. Begone! The first figure faded with a laugh, unseen by Talos, who now stared at the second. He wasn't surprised to see another image of a Night Lord, his own armor facing him once more. Talos felt a smile creeping across his lips at the sight. It was his armor laid bare, the cannibalism and repairs left unpainted and visible to the naked eye. His chest plate was still the deep blue of the Ultramarines. The armor of his leg was the royal yellow of the Imperial Fists, and the thigh guard attached was the gunmetal gray of the Crippled Steel Confessors chapter. A harlequin's display of colors and allegiances made up the figure's warplate, and Talos lost himself in the memories of where and when each piece was taken. Most he'd not even thought about for years, decades even. The shoulder guard ripped from the corpse of a Crimson Fists veteran was a particularly pleasant recollection. They'd fought hand to hand, an uncomplicated brawl of fury against fury, gauntlets pounding cracks in each other's armor, until Talos had managed to crush the other warrior's windpipe. Once the loyalist Astartes was strangled into unconsciousness, Talos had broken his spine and smashed his skull open against the hull of First Claw's waiting land raider. With the Crimson Fist finally dead, the Night Lord let the body fall to the ground. Strange how the centuries were affecting his memory. He'd believed once that his recollection was almost eidetic. Now he realized he'd forgotten the most ferocious 3 minutes of fighting in his entire life. The second figure removed his helm, showing a face that mirrored his own, but for the curving symbol tattooed on its pale cheek. You know me, the second figure said. And it was right. Talos did know. He recognized the faintly patronizing cadence in the man's speech and the sickly sweet scent rising from his armor. The same smell emanated from the exalted. You are the Shaper of Fate, Talos said. Vendred is one of your slaves. The figure nodded, his black eyes a perfect image of Talos's own. He is one of mine, a champion of my cause, a beneficiary of my gifts, not a slave. His will is his own. I believe differently. Believe what you will. He is of some value to me. You, however, could be so much more. I have no interest in... Power. That was the first sensation that drummed from his twin hearts, as though they pushed strength itself through his body with each dual beat. This was not the laughable power of blithe immortality and pleasure, but something altogether more familiar. He turned his head to regard the others on the command deck. The Atramentor, all eight of them, knelt before him. Beyond them, the bridge crew worked their stations, each and every one a human with a servitor aide, all working diligently. He gestured to the Terminators, abasing themselves before him. Rise! They rose, taking their places flanking his throne. As clear as the sound of his own breathing within his battle helm, as real as his own red-bathed sight, he felt the sudden surety that one of the Atramentar would speak. It would be about the Exalted's punishment. Lord, growled Abraxas, the Atramentar warrior closest to the throne, the Exalted awaits your judgment. He knew then, before he even spoke, that the Exalted would break under 38 night cycles of physical and psychic torture. The Atramentar could provide the former, Talos himself would provide the latter. Mark my words, brothers, Talos said. He will not last 40 nights under our care. The eight Terminators nodded, knowing he spoke the truth, knowing he had foreseen it in the winds of fate. We are 1 hour from our destination, Lord, said one of the mortal bridge officers. Talos closed his eyes and smiled at the images he saw imprinted in his mind.
When we re-enter real space, seek the engine signatures of three freighters using the third moon as shield against Auspic's returns. Cripple them quickly and ready first, second, and third claws for boarding actions. The whispers began. They thought he couldn't hear them. The whispers about his new power, about 10th Company's resurging strength. Let them praise him in whispers. He needed no obsequiousness to his face. Talos relaxed into the command throne, letting his thoughts drift into the infinity of what was yet to come, feeling the skeins of fate like 1,000 threads under his fingertips. Each strand led to a possible future that played out before his eyes. If he merely concentrated for a single moment, the future is unwritten. He took a breath, feeling naked without his armor, and swallowing the rising urge to slay these apparitions before him. I am a seer, and I know the path of the future is darkened by choices yet unmade. His reflection, in its salvaged armor, shook its head. I can offer you the secret sight any mortal must have in order to pierce the mists. My second sight is pure. Talos spat on the chest plate of the patchwork armor, where, much to his discomfort, the Imperial Eagle still shone undefiled. Yours is the bane of sanity. Leave! He turned to the third, aware of a buzzing sound that felt almost tactile, crawling against his skin. Flies covered the armor of the third figure, fat and blood red, though patches of occasional blue showed through the insect vermin as they swarmed over the armor's surface in a rippling, random tide. The figure wore no helm. The face was his own, blighted by swollen sores and infected cuts. Through cracked lips which bled a thin orange fluid, the figure shook its head and spoke with the voice of a grunting, drowning beast.
I was summoned here, it said, but you will never be one of my champions. I have no use for you, and you have no will to wield the power I offer.
Talos fixed on the first point of cohesion in all this foolish madness. Who summoned you?
One of your kind wove his pleas into unspace for a flicker of my attention. A magus begging into the warp.
An Astartes? A Night Lord? A human? The figure faded, taking its rank stench into oblivion as it went. Who summoned you? Talos cried into the darkness. When silence was the only reply, he turned to the fourth and final figure, the act of facing it, bringing it into being. The last figure showed the greatest deviation from Talos's own image, and that alone set the Night Lord's lip into a disrespectful sneer. This figure, unlike the others, was in motion as if unable to remain still. It swayed from foot to foot, hunched over akin to a beast ready to leap, breathing, rasping from its helmet's vox speakers. The armor itself was red, the red of a body's darkest blood, edged in bronze so filthy it looked as dull and worthless as copper. It was still his armor, but lacking his familiar trophies, and sporting fresh battle damage as well as the repainted surfaces and bronze modifications made it an unnerving sight, seeing his most treasured possession so twisted. "Make this good," he said, teeth clenched. The figure reached up, removing its helm with shaking hands. The face it revealed was a mess of scars, burns and bionics, framing a malevolent grin.
I am Corneth, it grunted through the toothy smile.
I know that name.
Yes, your brother Uzas cries it, as it takes skulls for my throne.
He is one of your slaves?
Talos couldn't tear his eyes from seeing his own face so damaged. Half of the head was replaced by oil-smeared bionic plating that fused with raw, inflamed skin at the edges. The flesh that remained was blistered and uneven from burn scarring, or darkened by badly sealed cuts from what must have been horrendous blows to offset the enhanced healing of Astarte's physiology. Most unnerving of all was the way he swayed, hunched over and ape-like, with the same dead-eyed grin Uzas wore when trying to maintain his attention on a difficult conversation.
"Blood," it wheezed. "And souls. Blood for the blood god. Souls for the soul eater."
"Is Uzas your slave? Answer me."
"Not yet. Soon. Soon he will stand as a champion among my warriors, but not now, not yet."
"Whoever summoned you to win me to your allegiance has wasted their time. This is almost laughable."
"Time is short," the figure still grinned, "and such sights I have to show you."
Talos had more insults to offer, more rejections to voice, but found he couldn't speak. His lungs locked, feeling like slabs of quivering stone behind his fused ribs. It was a savage echo of the moment he'd been poisoned, and he felt the same sensation as the meat within his body shuddered, stealing his breath. This time, as he fell to his knees, his breathless wheezes weren't curses, but laughter. The warrior of blood was fading. Talos knew in the world of flesh, his lungs were purging the taint that brought him here.
"Witness my gifts,"
Carnath said, desperate now, ferocious in his eagerness.
"See the strength I offer. Do not abandon this one chance."
"Go back to hell."
The Night Lord grinned through bloody teeth and vomited black mist into the nothingness. Talos opened his eyes again. Immediately he felt vulnerable. He was on his back, prone. Filtered through the red of his visor display, he recognized the scarred ceiling of the mess hall, and his targeting reticule marked three figures standing above him. He did not know who they were or what their presence indicated. All three were mortals, in dark robes, marked by blasphemous symbols, backing away as soon as his consciousness returned. "Praesite," he said, and their vague identities were further masked, reduced to the rich blur of thermal traces. The first died as Talos rose to his feet and pounded his fist into the human's face. The Night Lord felt the man's head give with a wrenching snap of skull bone, and the corpse spun away without another sound. He was on the second robed figure before the first had hit the rubble-strewn ground, gauntlets clasped around the mortal's frail neck, eliciting several wet clicks as he squeezed and twisted. The mortal's eyes bulged as the sound of dry twigs snapping echoed into the air. Once the man's head was wrenched backwards, after several seconds of teasing enjoyment, Talos let that body fall in turn. The third figure was trying to escape, running for a set of double doors that led deeper into the prison complex. Three sprinted strides brought the Night Lord within reach, and he clawed at the fleeing heat blur. The thermal smear screamed in his hands. He wasn't even hurting it yet. Talos lifted the smudged miasma of reds and yellows off the ground and voided his praesite. A human face, male, middle-aged and weeping, met his natural vision.
"Going somewhere?" the Astartes growled through his vox speakers.
"Please," the man wept. "Please, don't kill me."
Through his helm's olfactory receptors, Talos scented the cloying incense on the mortal's robes and the sour reek of his breath. He was infected with something. Something within his body. A cancer, perhaps, eating at his lungs. Taint. He reeked of taint. Talos let the man stare into the impassive, skulled face of his helm for several more beats of his panicked mortal heart. Let the fear build. The words of his gene father, the teachings of the Eighth Legion, show the prey what the predator can do. Show that death is near. The prey will be in your thrall.
Do you wish to join your friends in death? He snapped, knowing his helm speakers turned the threat into a mechanical bark.
No, please, please, please.
Talos shivered involuntarily, begging. He had always found begging particularly repulsive, even as a child in the street gangs of Atra Hive on Nostramo, to reveal that level of weakness to another being. With a feral snarl, he pulled the man's weeping, pleading face against the cold front of his helm. Tears glistened on the ceramite. Talos felt his armor's machine spirit roil at the new sensation, like a river serpent thrashing in deep silt. It woke again to feed on the mortal's sorrow and fear.
Tell me, the Night Lord growled, your master's name.
Roof.
Talos snapped the mortal's neck and stalked from the room.
Reuven.
Reuven resisted the urge to shrink before the War Master's displeasure. Abaddon's claw scraped less than lovingly over the sorcerer's shoulder guard, tearing the oath scroll that was bound there. Several strips of the hallowed parchment ghosted to the ground, floating patiently on the breath of an invisible wind.
He has awakened early.
Abaddon repeated Reuven's last words back to him.
Yes, my War Master, and...
He hated to add this.
He has slain my acolytes.
Abaddon gurgled laughter through a fanged maw. You were of the Night Lords before you came to my legion, yet their actions surprise you now.
Reuven inclined his helm with its lightning bolts painted onto the black ceramite. He was both intrigued and confused by the War Master's rhetorical statement.
Yes, my War Master.
That makes your carelessness doubly entertaining.
Abaddon and Reuven stood on the ground floor of the prison complex, overseeing the ragged march of convicts towards the waiting slave ship that rested, slug-shaped and fattened for cargo capacity, on the dusty red plain beneath the prison mountain. Legion serfs, servitors, and the hulking form of black-clad Astartes directed the column of convicts, occasionally serving out beatings or, in a few instances, executions, if a convict's jubilation at freedom brought him to attempt an escape. Robed acolytes, dressed identically to the humans Talos had slaughtered only minutes before, walked alongside the column, proselytizing about the glory of the War Master, the false rule of the Golden Throne, the abominations done in the Emperor's name by his armies, and the inevitability of the Imperium's demise in the name of justice. Several of these priests shrieked at the thousands of prisoners in gibbering tongues unknown to all but the Dark God's favored servants, seeking any recognition within the convict's eyes, hoping to stumble across a chaos-tainted individual and raise such a blessed scion of the ruinous powers out of the ragtag cannon-fodder regiments of slaves being formed from the prison world's population. Solace would be stripped bare of life before the sun rose. The sorcerer, Reuven, still said nothing.
Your acolytes were worthless anyway, Abaddon said. Listen to these preachers howling about the unworthiness of the false emperor. Such theatrics. And for what? Every soul upon this world was betrayed by the Imperium. Discarded, hated, and forgotten, purely for the sin of living their lives as they chose. These men need no ideology, beyond learning they will be given the chance to earn vengeance through bloodshed.
If my War Master does not approve of the methods of the acolytes I have trained...
Do I sound like I approve?
No, my War Master.
Cease scurrying, Reuven. Where is the Night Lord Prophet now?
Reuven closed his eyes, resting his gauntleted hand against the side of his helm, as if trying to make out a sound in the distance.
Making his way to the landing platform, my war master.
Good. The Astartes helm, spiked by the Despoiler's trophy racks, clattered together as Abaddon turned to the sorcerer.
You were foolish to let your acolytes remain as long as they did. I was, my war master. Their chants were necessary to maintain the vision, but the prophet threw off the toxins quicker than I had anticipated.
Am I to assume he resisted your attempts at conversion?
Abaddon's voice betrayed just how little faith it had in the idea from the beginning.
He refused the Dark Ones, my war master. To their faces, this was not some minor conjuration. I summoned reflections of the four powers, a trickle of power from the winds of the warp, each to offer their gifts.
The blasphemous symbols branded onto Abaddon's flesh burned and itched with maddening intensity.
What did he see? What was so easy to refuse?
I know not, my war master, but his vision was true. I felt the presence of the four. A momentary glance of their attention, if you will.
Abaddon chuckled. The sound lacked even a shadow of humor. Grotesque and unsubtle, but deeply amusing.
Yes, my war master.
Return to orbit, Reuven. Your work here is done.
The sorcerer hesitated, clutching his staff made from the fused bones of tyrannic-bred Xenos.
Do you not wish me to intercept the Night Lord and make another attempt?
Abaddon watched the column ahead, where one of his Black Legion Astartes was dragging a screaming prisoner from the line. With a single swipe of a blade, the human's head left his shoulders.
He has been made to feel vulnerable, and his legion looks even weaker in his eyes. The cracks already in his resolve will soon split wide. This was never about converting the Puritan bastard in one fleeting moment. It was merely the first move in a much longer game of regicide.
Shall I inform the Exalted of our failure?
Abaddon grinned.
Our failure?
My failure, War Master.
Better. No. I will speak with the Exalted myself and inform him that his pet seer survived untainted. Vandred was a fool to think it would happen so quickly.
Then I shall do as you bid, my war master.
Abaddon didn't answer. Such an obvious statement needed no affirmation. Instead, he turned, irritation touching his feral features for a moment.
Did you at least kill the slaves?
The Exalted had won the orbital battle for him in a fraction of the time Abaddon had planned for. The least he could do to repay the Night Lord Commander was a little favor like that.
Bleed the slaves on board the Thunderhawk, the Exalted had asked. But allow nothing to be traced to either legion.
Whatever you wish, brother, Abaddon had replied.
What reason do you have for making this look like some nonsensical accident?
The Exalted had smiled to hear it described like that.
A petty reason, but a necessary one.
eliminating the allies of a potential rival. My prophet gathers his resources. He will not take my place as commander.
Abaddon found that rather quaint. The Exalted's claws had to be clean of this murder. Amusing to see how subtle these Night Lords could be when they chose.
"I sent 50 prisoners, my lord," said Reuven. "The Thunderhawk was overrun, and the other Night Lords returned to orbit in one of our ships."
50. How amusingly excessive.
"Against how many?"
2 slaves.
Abaddon nodded, looking back at the columns of freed convicts. 50 against 2. And the crime apparently blameless. At least something had been done right. Talos had been unable to reach any of First Claw on the Vox, nor had he made contact with Blackened or the Covenant of Blood. He suspected jamming, though to what purpose he couldn't begin to guess. Killing them all down here made no sense at all, for there would be no gain for the Black Legion. While Abaddon may have had 1,000 faults, with overconfidence first among them, he was not a fool. His grasp of tactical insight had only grown stronger over the centuries. Then again, nothing the Black Legion did was ever particularly predictable. Once, Talos thought, they were the best of us. How the mighty are fallen. As the lifter doors opened, he stared at the bodies spread across the landing platform. It took no time at all to see they had been sectioned by heavy bolter fire. Talos's attention immediately fixed upon the Thunderhawk, silent on its grey clawed landing gear, its forward gang ramp lowered. Black streaks of burned and twisted metal showed on the blue hull, where explosives had been employed to wreck the ramp's hydraulics. The convicts had evidently been extremely well equipped. Talos was already walking forward, crushing meat and bone underfoot, his blade and bolter at the ready. One of the nearby corpses wheezed at him. Talos didn't break stride. He glanced at the black-toothed, bleeding ruin of a man and destroyed its head with a single bolt shell. The gunshot's report echoed off the Thunderhawk's hull.
"Septimus," he voxed.
The answer he received did not please him.